There's a hunger in my heart, a hunger in my soul for you. And it grows and it grows and it feeds me like it's never fed me before. Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for The Affair. I was about to say Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, it's not Orange is the New Black.
I had to search my memory bank quickly. For episode 3 of The Affair, hey, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
Hey. So I found out some stuff from in between the last podcast and this podcast.
Okay.
Fiona Apple is the one that does the opening song sequence, the one with the drifty, dreamy beach water and sand and stuff. And I should have known that because that was all over. That was all over the internet and all over the promotions for the show and stuff. But we're here to do episode 3 of The Affair. We're jamming them in there, man. We did one on Wednesday. We did two on Wednesday. Actually, posted one on Wednesday, one on Thursday. Today, we'll probably jam a few in there to catch up. I think they're probably going to be up to number 6, right?
Yeah, this Sunday is going to be number 6. Of course, we'll put it out on Wednesday. But, yeah, all the way up to number 6 out of 10. So it's pretty important that we get caught up, because even a few of the notes that I made when I was watching this episode, episode 3, some of the questions I had have already been answered by continuing on. So
yeah, it's a little tricky to watch a few of them and then go back and do podcasts and remember what you've seen and try to remember which ones you're talking about for that episode. So
well, right, and I've got questions written down that now I have answers to, because like before this episode started, I was watching the intro to it, and I was actually noted to ask you if you had noticed at the beginning of the show and the opening pictures and all that, and that it showed the little boy on the beach with the rough waves and everything and lots of water and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of tried to watch scene by scene of that opening, and it made me think that maybe something had happened with her son, that he had drowned, which we had talked about before because of the surfboard and all that. But you know, as you go on, you find out.
So how many, what episode have you actually watched up to?
I'm through 5. I've watched through five, but 5 I actually watched in bed on my phone. So I think I kind of dozed off in part of it, but I am caught up. What about you?
I watched up through 4.
Okay. Oh, so I know more than you do. Okay.
I have some observations I made, just like I told you offline, just listening to our podcast. Like what, like why I said something in the podcast number 1 or 2, I can't remember, but about how he saved 3 of the kids. Like why would he only have saved 3 and not 4?
Right.
But I think he saved 4 because in episode 1 he saved Martin from hanging, he saved Stacy from choking, he saved Trevor from the plane crash, the imaginary plane crash, and then he saved Whitney from the rape of going up to the room with the Scotty. So he saved every kid somehow, one way or another, in real or fantasy. And all we know about Allison is she's lost her son, so she hasn't saved anyone.
Well, but in her remembrance, she saved Stacy. Remember? Because she's the one who actually hit her on the back.
Yeah, I guess.
So, yeah, so she's the one who did the saving. And nobody else knew anything about Martin and his hanging. They don't show us anything from Allison's standpoint about Whitney going upstairs with, was it Scotty?
Well, she didn't see it.
Well, in Noah's recollection, she did see it. Remember, she was standing there, but in her recollection, she didn't see it. So, how much of this is real?
I thought he met up with her after that, like in another part of the... She was outside or something.
No, remember, she was standing at the steps, and she asked him first, what are you doing? When she saw him walking up, and then Noah came up. That's how I remember it. So, you know, but she, you know, I don't know.
So why do you think they had him saving these kids in episode 1? Why do you think they portrayed him real or imaginarily saving all 4 of his children?
I think it's the way he's remembering himself, right?
Yeah, but why? Why did the story make it look like he saved all four kids?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, he wants to be the hero, maybe. He wants to have some redeeming qualities, maybe, in his version of what happens. Why? Were you thinking something different?
I don't know why. I'm making the observation, but I don't know why they're portraying it that way.
Well, you know, there's several different things, and people on Reddit are talking about it, too, about the detective in... When he's talking to Noah, says that he's divorced, but when he's talking to Allison, he talks about that he's been married for 25 years.
Yeah, well, we'll do that in the episode. I mean,
okay,
we're going to get to that, right? I'm just asking you about episode one, why they seem to portray that. All right, well, let's just get into the episode. So episode three, Noah, part one is Noah, and he's swimming again, swimming at the Montauk estate, and it looks like he sees Bruce from the pool or whatever. He's outside swimming, and he has a talk with Bruce and talks about the writing process and the daily routine of how a writer needs to conduct his day. And I really like this scene, actually, and I have a prediction that Bruce is going to switch from being a dickhead to a good guy in the stretch of this series. What did you think about this first scene?
Well, I did note that it was like a nod back to episode one already. It was, you know, the water at the beginning and all that. The way Bruce called him in, Noah certainly didn't like it, but I tried to find something offensive with what he was saying, and I couldn't. The only thing I could find was, you know, where he called him in, almost like a child, to come in. He was wet. He hadn't even changed his clothes or anything yet. And he was, like, summoned to the room to have this conversation. And Noah obviously didn't want to have it with him. But I tried to find something offensive about Bruce in that scene, and I couldn't do it. It seemed like the advice he gave him was pretty sound.
Yeah, he gave him great advice. And I think he gave him the advice that every writer probably needs to have. So he makes this analogy about how he was a writer, a young writer, Bruce, when he was a young writer. He had a daily routine and he would goof around and try to write a little bit and then give it up and go out and play tennis. And he played tennis with a guy who, after a while, he pretty much said, "I can't play tennis anymore with you. I have to write." And then a year later, he was a good writer and the tennis guy was a better tennis player, but the discipline he took to not just do the fun stuff he wanted to do and become a better writer made him a best-selling writer, while the guy just became, you know, good at tennis.
Right.
Now, I really love that analogy. There's a writer that one of my favorite writers is a guy named Robert Greene. Mm-hmm. And he wrote some great books about, like, power, the magic of power and stuff. And he said that when he wrote, he would write 365 days a year, through every holiday, through every birthday, through every single thing that anyone would ever try to distract him from. And he would just write until he was done. And I think a writer has to do that. But so I thought Bruce was giving him good advice that you wouldn't probably think. Like, okay, this guy's pretty comfortable now, but, you know, he's coming from this discipline of, like, really knowing what to do in order to become good at his craft.
Well, right. And I think he really was trying to pass on some life experience to Noah in that instance. And it just seemed kind of genuine to me.
Yeah, it was real. It wasn't like belittling him. It was telling him, it was imparting wisdom, I think.
Yeah, I don't think Noah wanted that so much, though.
It doesn't matter if he wanted it. Most people don't want the wisdom they need. It comes to them, and they don't want it, you know? It's hard. It's a hard shift for them. But anyway, he comes up to Helen's room, and she's asleep, and he kind of snuggles up to her, and he wakes her up. This guy's a horn dog, man.
Yeah, he gets in bed with her and has his way. for sure. It's like morning and night and morning and night and morning and night. It's pretty good.
So in the morning, Helen is shopping online. It looks like online for bowls or some sort of containers that she wants to buy. What's she doing with her computer there?
Yeah, she was looking at bowls, and the bowls, she's like, do you like this one or do you like this one? And he just couldn't care less, you could tell. And I think she was buying it maybe for a shop, right? Because that's what she was talking about. I think she does something. She has some type of a shop or something. Anyway, and they were like almost the same price and all this kind of stuff. And they looked almost exactly the same. And Noah's just, I don't know. What do you think that was trying to show us? That he wasn't very interested in what she was doing, or that the thing she was doing was so, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the thing she is doing is very superficial and meaningless. And to him, it's like, whatever, I don't care. You know, I don't care about your bowls. And it is superficial, you know. For example, I think if she's running her own business, she should just decide, I like this. I'm gonna do it. Like, remember when she asked him about which dress she wanted him, you know, pick a mm-hmm. dress, and she mm-hmm. picked the other one anyway.
Right.
Like, why is she involving him in that if she just knows what she wants to do? I don't know. It seems superficial to me. Like she's kind of superficial, and the deep dark stuff is with Allison, and that's what's really got him hooked.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Girls, I think a lot of times will do that kind of stuff. You know, what do you like, this or this? And then, you know, the guy will pick something and the girl will go, I kind of like this. I don't know. Girls do it with girls, too. It's not just a girl to guy thing. But yeah, it was, these bowls had some kind of a, I don't know, one was made by people, and then the proceeds went to fund something, and the other was made by repurposing cardboard or something like that. So it's just trying to make a statement.
Don't go into the details of something that's superficial. It's just meaningless. I mean, it's meant to look meaningless, I think.
I suppose, but I mean, I think it was trying to show that's the kind of thing she was into, is something that was like the big decision for her. She couldn't make up her mind on those two things. And yeah. I don't know. I think there's a little meaning in that. Not the details, but in what she was doing. I thought that was pretty, pretty telling. Although I'm not real sure what it told. But
well, it told me superficiality. Because here we're talking about dead children and feelings about life and other stuff that come up later on. And she's looking at bowls on the internet. I mean,
yeah, but he doesn't know any of this yet, though.
Yeah, but that's what it is. We know it now.
It is, right.
So Noah has a breakfast meeting with Harry, the agent that Bruce has introduced him to. And Harry, or Bruce, kind of overhears that this meeting is happening. And I think he's happy for Noah. I think Bruce is turning a corner kind of here. I may be totally wrong in the long run, but it looks like for now he's like becoming sort of a better guy. And then Whitney has an interview to be the au pair. Now, Michelle, is this the au pair that is the threesome with Mary Kate?
Oh my gosh, that didn't even dawn on me. No, surely not, because she's a child. She's underage.
Surely it is, because later.
Oh my gosh.
Later on, she says, "God, this guy was creepy. He was looking at my ass." And then Noah says, "All right, that's it. You're not going to be au pair at that house." I think it's connected.
Oh wow, I don't know. I hope not, but I don't know.
Well, it's too coincidental to not have any meaning. Anyway, Helen kind of bitchily puts Grandpa on babysitting duty so Noah can go to his interview or his talk with Harry.
Right. Well, Helen's got the Skype thing, and of course Whitney's not going to be there, so somebody's got
to
do it.
So Noah does meet with Harry, and he describes his day, like, what, you know, what do you do to write, Noah, during your day? And he starts at 5 a.m., like Bruce did or Bruce used to. So Noah's kind of listened about getting started and working hard in the morning. And Harry seems discouraged by the writing business. I don't know. He wants to get out of it. He's like discouraged by self-publishing and the kind of the new wave of the way things are working in the writing publication business. He seemed discouraged. So that was what I took from that.
Well, yeah, and he also opened up to Noah. That's what I took more than the content of what he was saying, was that he opened up to him. And I thought that was interesting and kind of telling because, you know, this is Noah's take. So Harry even opened up to him, this guy who's kind of tough and everybody must want him, right, to be their he's an agent, right, or a publisher.
Yeah, he's an agent. He gets deals for writers with publishers. Right. I mean, he's probably successful enough. It looks like he's, you know, if he's the agent of Bruce, Bruce is a good writer, so he's got the commissions and stuff from that. So,
right, but he seems impressed with Noah. He seems impressed that Noah can find time to do this with the children, to do his writing and all that. And then, of course, when Noah goes into his story, he seems impressed with the story. The story gives him some credibility.
He asked Noah about what the story is, and Noah says it's the death of Pastoral, an affair where the man kills the lady in the long run, but doesn't know how or why. And Harry wants to see a sample, so I guess Noah sends him kind of an unedited early draft of chapter one, which he regrets later, but he sends him a sample.
Mm-hmm.
So the next scene at the diner, Noah sees Jane.
Yes.
He's snooping around, sniffing around for Allison.
Right.
And he buys t-shirts. He's looking for Allison, but he just says, well, I'll get a couple t-shirts. He tries to cover up that he's looking for Allison.
Right.
He buys $100 worth of t-shirts. Holy crap.
Yeah, and again, it's with the money with him. I made a note of that somewhere. It's not right here, but we see this a lot with Noah. Have you noticed it? Everything comes down to the money. There's a lot of money talk. The t-shirts, the jam, other things. We'll get to it, but I thought that was, it could have some meaning. I don't know.
So, Oscar overhears this and kind of brushes past, and I think it's somewhat important that Oscar knows that he's looking for Allison.
Mm-hmm.
So Noah heads to the library, and he finds his book in the library, and nobody's checked it out.
Oh, I know. That was pitiful.
Nobody's even read his book. And there's a dedication for Helen, who makes the world seem good, which seemed like a kind of a lukewarm dedication, right? You know, Michelle, you're my friend. You make my life seem good. It's like not fantastic, or I couldn't live without you, or didn't you? What did you think of that dedication page?
It wasn't the most heartwarming thing I had ever read, especially not for a first book. You think of something like that, and you see where people really put some heartfelt emotion sometimes into it. But, I mean, I'm not a writer, so I don't know.
At least he had Helen's name in there, not a list of chicks. So he kind of sees that. And then Allie finds him and starts to show him an island tour. And during their tour, walking around the island, they talk. And he tries to tell her that he's married and how they should just be friends, and even if it's flirty friends, I don't know, it seems like he's trying to put a damper on the whole romance at this point.
Yeah, for sure. He's really having second thoughts, even though he just went into the lobster roll looking for her. And, but he's, in his view, in his mind, in his recollection, he's having these second thoughts about it. And, when she is obviously, she's being overtly open, I think, to the idea.
Yeah, she's still flashing her legs and stuff in his version.
Well, she's telling him, kind of. I don't really think she could be more open about it. But she's like, okay, we'll keep it here. If this is what you want, we'll just be friends. You call me, I won't call you, and that kind of thing.
Right, whatever you want, just to keep it going.
Right.
So she takes him to the dock where they see Will again.
That was weird to me.
Why?
Because why? If our guess is right that Will is doing something, illegal and we're saying that he's probably not bringing fish, then why would she take Noah there to buy fish?
Yeah, why would she invite him into the dangerous crime,
right?
Potential crime scene.
Right, and why would Will even be there? Because she said earlier, of course, I don't remember which story, you know, if it was hers or his, but that he works overnight, and then he goes home in the morning. And I'm guessing the lobster roll's not open for breakfast. Maybe it is, but I don't picture it being that early, and she's taking him by there. And I would think that Will would be gone. I don't know. Something about that was just weird. And then, you know, Scotty walks up.
Yeah, Scotty finds them and he kind of talks up Will, like what a great guy he is, how he's a total asset to our company. He's on retainer at the ranch. And he hands him an envelope of like
right.
cash or something.
Right. And he kind of talks Allison down. And I think he calls her Bailey here, too. But he talks her down just a little bit. He looks a little weirdly at her standing there with Noah. And I'm not sure he wouldn't. But, you know, he talks about how Allison monopolizes, you know, conversations. She's a talker. And, I mean, it was a little disparaging, I thought. And then he points out that he's invited himself to dinner and Cole's making ribs. So he brings up the husband in front of him.
Well, plus you'd think he could hand the cash over like 3 minutes later after they've left, but he has no hesitation to hand the manila envelope of, looks like the size of a dollar bill. I mean, it's right. obviously got money in it.
Well, and he's talking about keeping him on a retainer as he's handing him this envelope. So yeah, why would you not say?
He could have said he's a great guy. You know, we're lucky to have him as an employee and just shut up. And they're going to leave in a minute and a half later, give him the cash.
But why would he be an employee anyway? How much fish do these people eat?
My point, Michelle, is that he's like not worried at all about who sees this transaction.
Right, right. But that's what, kind of what I'm saying. The whole thing was just an odd encounter. Her taking him there and then Scotty coming up and the whole interaction that they had, everything about that struck me as just weird.
And Allison doesn't like Scotty. She doesn't like that he's coming over for dinner and... I guess there's a town hall meeting and it's open to the public, but Noah wants to go, I guess, to find out more about the topic for his book, but I don't know if it's that really or just to see Allison more or what.
Yeah, I don't know.
She jump kisses him. She's all over him, you know, in his version here. She's kissing him and he has to stop her and he's putting it all on her flirtiness.
Mm-hmm. He actually pushes her away.
So then he goes back home to the Bruce house, and it's dinner, I guess, dinner or late lunch or dinner maybe. But Miranda, the cook, the helper, has cooked it, and Grandma's there trying to teach manners to one of the little boys, how to pick up peas with your fork.
Yeah.
And here's where Whitney says her au pair job sucks, the kids are brats, and the father's staring at my butt all the time. And Noah tries to say, that's it, you're not going to be working for them anymore. But Helen jumps in and says, oh, come on, she needs a job. And she supports the job.
Well, she just says that Whitney's known to exaggerate things sometimes. I don't think she's really condoning an adult being lecherous toward her 16-year-old. But she thinks Whitney might be... complaining about it because, hey, it's a job and it's a little harder than...
Well, it's another hint of, like, Noah doing something to prevent something bad from happening, and Helen has no clue. She's just like, oh, the kid needs a job. Come on, she may exaggerate sometimes, so let's not make a big deal out of this. And
right.
The other kid's working at the horse ranch with the with the drug smuggling family. I don't know. I think it's just there's a theme here being established, and that's it. So Grandma gives Whitney more marriage advice. Like she can't understand why Helen chose Noah for one thing, and like all in front of him. Like what a old hag that lady is.
I mean, how can you do that? They've been married for a long time, and how do you do that?
She is awful. This grandma, what's her name? is
Margaret,
awful.
I think.
She's horrible. I didn't like the wine on the guy for $1,000. I didn't like the picking at people, and I don't like this insulting this guy. And he's like biting his tongue. You can just see he's like holding himself back. But
yeah, she had to get a shot the day they got married because she was broken out in hives. I mean, she's going into all this and laughing about it with his daughter. This is her father. I don't know. It's really bad. She's basically saying that the mom should have married somebody with money.
Right. She calls him an idealist who can't evolve to pragmatist. And Noah just says that means money. And so Noah starts to, like, defensively, you know, it's you can understand why, but he starts to diss them and their money. And Grandma doesn't phase her. She promises to continue this later with Whitney when they have time to talk.
Well, yeah, but she also brings up that they're, you know, maybe he won't want to take the money for his kids' private school education then. So she brings that up.
Yeah, it's a whole theme of money. We're giving you money and you're taking it. And I can say whatever because you're taking our money, we can say whatever we want in front of you.
Right. And in front of you is bad enough. In front of your children, that is, that can't happen. So the fact that he even sat there and listened to any of that or allowed his children to hear that.
Yeah.
It's not good.
So Noah heads to the town hall meeting, which is at the firehouse. And he sees Allie and Cole and he hides from them. And I guess in the latter half of this episode, we hear Allie she warns him that she's going to be with Cole. I don't know if he knew this in the first half.
She told him at the dock. When they were there, she said, you know, if you're going to come, Cole's going to be there, I think. So.
Okay, so he sees them and he kind of ducks behind the wall. And Oscar sees Noah and is kind of, hey, buddy. He's like all palling around with him. But the meeting's over because the Lockharts pissed on everything and everyone got drunk. And they pissed on Oscar's idea. But your girl's here, and he's pointing out Allie. So Oscar knows she's married to Cole, right?
Yeah, of course he does.
He's calling her your girl.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of unusual.
Yeah, it's kind of almost provocative. It's like he's trying to make him mad or trying to get something started, maybe, because he can't know anything started, but he certainly suspects something.
I don't think he cares. I think he's a horn dog, too, and he had sex with Allie when she was a kid, and now he's, you know.
I think he cares. I think he wants it to have happened, so he's got something to hold over her head, kind of.
I don't know. I think he's a horn dog. He likes sex. He would have liked to, he'd like to have sex with her again, probably, but
yeah.
I don't think he's in love with her or anything.
No.
So Oscar... So Allie kind of waves and they get together and walk away and they, you know, they kind of look guilty that they're together, but they talk and the talk is all about how my husband and I are independent. And again, this is his version. So,
right.
God, man, she's like, you could fuck me out of your system. Just spend some time with me. And she's really aggressive in this version and he has to stop it. Like, don't rush me. He's a weenie. I don't like him in her version.
In his version. Right. That's exactly what I said on Reddit today. I said I can appreciate Noah at times in Allison's version. But in his version, there's many different areas that I just don't like him at all. And I don't buy this. I don't buy it for a second. I can understand that some guy may not want to get involved in this situation, but usually if they really don't want to get involved in this kind of situation, their actions show it, and they're not hunting down the woman and following her and going by her house and doing all that. I don't buy this for 10 minutes. I don't buy that he is pushing her away and telling her no. I just don't believe it. It doesn't ring true to me. Why would he keep chasing her down and then push her away when she comes on to him? Something about that doesn't ring true to me. I mean, it was getting at the point that I was rolling my eyes when he was going, Allison, I'm married. And I'm just like, oh, geez, right. But go by our work, you know, go by our house. And he just told her right here that no matter what he's doing, he's thinking about her. When he's talking to his kids, when he's sleeping, he can't sleep. When he wakes up, he's thinking about her. When he's having sex with his wife, I'm thinking about you. That is huge, huge thing to say to somebody. And, but then he pushes her away. Nah, I don't buy it.
So Noah heads home and he hears pounding on the TV. And so Helen, his wife, Mitch, and Whitney are watching Ferris Bueller.
Oh, but you didn't finish it. This is when she starts to kiss him. We got to finish that other scene.
Well, they start having. You're right. I mean, you're right about Noah. He's a weenie. He says, "Oh, I can't. I'm a married man. I need to have protect my relationship." But then he like kisses her and screws her and makes out with her.
He doesn't. Yeah, they don't have sex right there. We think they did, but they don't.
I don't know what they did, but she's sitting on his lap, humping him. If she's not
right, they talk about it later, but they don't. But yeah.
So what's the difference? It's the same. It's the same thing. It's sexual act, you know, intentions.
It is, but after all that and all of that, you know, protesting, then she starts to kiss him. And he tells her to stop again.
It's all the same. We don't have to tell the detail, Michelle. Whether they laid on the grass and had sex or they did what they did, it's all the same. It's like,
I guess, but this part I think is important is because he tells her, he says, you know, it has to go at his speed. And he says, I know I sound like an asshole, but I need to be in charge.
He is an asshole. Because if she would have said, okay, you're right, you know, let's not do this, he would have grabbed her hand and said, oh, come on, baby, let's. He's a weenie. He's got no resolve, no resolution to be one way or the other. He's a flip-flopper.
But I'm thinking, well, right, he is. But what I'm thinking is that whole I need to be in charge thing might be because he is in so little charge of any of the rest of his life. What's going on with his wife and his kids and his in-laws' house and the fact that his book's up in the air. It's like he's completely out of control of everything. And then, I don't know, I just saw that as like this cry for I need to be in charge. Okay. I could have been reading too much.
Okay, Dr. Ruth. So he gets home and he watches, they're watching Ferris Bueller. Why do you think they picked Ferris Bueller as the movie?
Because he was behaving irresponsibly. I don't know, the very last thing that he heard from the movie, the part where the car goes through the window and Ferris Bueller's friend, I forget his name, but he's like, what did I do? And I think that was, you know, it was kind of, he was standing there and he hears, what did I do?
Yeah. And he's washing his hands.
Yeah. He does a good job of washing his hands. So
then we see Noah and the detective, and he says something about Oscar Hodges. I made a note about this. I didn't catch the whole thing, but I guess he says to the detective, if I were you, I'd be interviewing Oscar Hodges.
Right.
Like, he's the more suspicious one. So,
well, right. And he talks about the feud that was between the Hodges and the Lockhart, saying that it's been going on, I think he says, for centuries or something. Back, he talks about something that happened way long ago, and then he says, read my book. So evidently this was something that he had researched and put into his, what we're assuming is his second book.
Yeah, I think it's a century. It's like during Prohibition. So it's in Montauk, right. Apparently used to be a bootlegging capital for moonshine during Prohibition. And people would bring in stuff because it's on the ocean. It was probably easily accessible. You know, watch Boardwalk Empire. You'll see how seaports become pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
But they bring in. Bootlegging was big there, so they'd bring it in and bring it to New York and stuff. And so they said there's a century-long feud between them, the Lockharts, and whatever Oscar is.
The Hodges, yeah.
So do yourself a favor and read my book. Yeah. So apparently he's working this into his book.
Right.
And then so that's it for part one. Next, part two, we see Allison. And she's looking happy and she's getting dressed up in a kind of a cute little dress, but it's like kind of a cheap dress, cheap old dress, right? It's like a sailor girl. She looks like a little sailor girl.
Yeah.
And she's singing and doing her laundry, and she just looks happy.
Yes, she does. And that's the first time in her story that I can recall her looking happy. But, I mean, I think she's hopeful in this situation. She's going to a job interview. And, I don't know, she seems kind of hopeful.
And Cole's there. They're at their house. So Cole comes in from either showering in the outside shower or swimming. He's got just like a towel on or whatever over his shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts to rant about the big house across the street. It's building and it's getting taller and it's kind of blocking their view. And they talk about the problems of like growth within cities getting bigger and, you know, how it's like locals should be able to keep the town the way it was and all that. But Ellie kisses him, and they kind of refer to this town meeting.
I didn't note that, but I did note that she didn't like him griping. She's uncomfortable with that. And we've seen Cole now. I mean, he really kind of went on a rant about this, about these people that are behind him. She's like, well, it doesn't obstruct our view. And I mean, I understand, like, you know, you don't want to obstruct anybody's view, but he's saying they can't go that high, blah, 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 blah. And he's like this really stickler for keeping things the same. And I just don't think she feels that as much as he does. And she was happy. And to have a woman who's been through everything this woman's been through, and to have her get up and she's doing some laundry and drinking some coffee and looking at the beach and she's singing and she's kind of happy. And we assume he really wants her to be happy, right? I mean, I think he loves her. I don't think we've seen anything that would indicate anything otherwise.
Yeah, he just doesn't know her very well. Like, he misses some clues.
Well, let her be happy.
She wants to, she's wearing this dress, and he kind of says, here, I'm going to get you a new dress. And she's, like, perfectly happy in her dress.
Oh, I know. I mean, what a horrible thing to say. It's a horrible thing to say. She's like, I like this dress. You know, she's like, how do I look or something? And he's like, well, the dress is kind of old. I mean, listen, if a girl is dressed and she's ready to go somewhere and she goes, how do I look? There is one answer. And that dress looks old is not it. So, I don't know. I mean, she was feeling good. And it's just like he just couldn't give her that. Sometimes you just have to give people that.
Well, I don't think he's trying to... I don't think he's measuring this and saying, okay, I'm seeing that you like this dress, but you know what? I think you would look better in a new dress. He just doesn't get it. He's not connecting to her. And he's kind of blind to this.
How can I connect to her when I've known her for 4 hours and her husband can't
connect?
Well,
he doesn't. He doesn't. He's being loving to her. He just doesn't get it that she's kind of happy. Just let her be happy. He misses that. So a couple things I thought about at this point. Like, the first thing is, like, in any crime drama or anything in life that involves business or money, if you follow the money, you'll get all the answers. And I actually wrote this down in my notes. And him wanting to buy her a new dress and him wanting to, like, rant against the improvement of the other town getting bigger and better. There's something, if you follow the money, I think you'll find a solution to this crime and to this whole series. He wants to keep the town small, but I think that's a front for his other business, whether it's illicit or not, this whole importing stuff on that boat.
It may be. I didn't think of that, but yeah, that would definitely make sense for whatever's going on. But if what he's got is so good, then why does he care? I mean, no, not why does he care. If what he's got is so good, then why is he so cash-strapped? And they talk about that again and again. I mean, when he wants to buy her a dress, you know, you get a dress, you might spend, what, $50, $100
on
a dress?
I think you have to accept a couple things, Michelle. They have money problems, and so they're in a crime operation of some sort that will help them solve their money problem. That's why most people get involved in crime. Like, it's like Walter White did, right? He had money problems. It evolved into something more than that later. But most people that are risking their freedom are doing it because they have the need for more money than they could get just getting up and going to a 9-to-5.
Well, there's another part that I want to bring up when it comes up, but I can't remember if it's in another episode, so I'll just wait. But I want to bring that back up to you.
Okay, but I think that's why, they don't... He either thinks, I got a shitty little house here on the Montauk Point, and I want more, and sometimes money problems are perceived. You could look at them and say, wow, they have a great life. She rides her bike to work at the restaurant, and, it's beautiful. But to him or to them or to whatever, it may not be enough, so people get involved in stupid stuff.
Well, absolutely, and you can certainly see how if you lived on this place and you were one of the worker bees, so to speak, and all these people with the money came in all the time flashing their money around, how...
Right.
You could feel
that's
inferior
also,
to that.
It's a vacation paradise, but they can't leave to go anywhere else because they don't have any money. I mean, it's like living on, Nantucket. It may be great to go there, but what if you were stuck there? You couldn't go anywhere else because you didn't have any money.
Right.
The other thing I thought about was before I saw this episode again, I was thinking, gosh, does Ellie ever drive? I've never seen her drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
And she drove. This is the first time we've seen her drive a car, I think. So, I was kind of buying into what you were saying, like maybe she was in a car accident or something that she always had to ride her bike. And
I think she just likes it. But yeah.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. But she does drive the car and she takes the car. And it's the first
time. If I lived in a place that I could ride a bike places, that's where I would be, is on a bike. I love that. So I really, that resonates with me, that she could do that. I mean, I didn't know why, because we never saw her drive, but I can see how people would love that.
And you realize that car is like a 1970 Ranchero. It's like not a nice new car. It's an old piece of shit car. All right, so she's going in for a job interview, and I just scrolled past all my notes. So she's going in for a job interview, and do you think she really wanted this job?
Yeah, I do. I do think she did until she realized what she was getting into. I think we're to assume here that she's a nurse. And, right? I mean, it was a nursing position, I'm assuming. I don't know other positions that float. And she doesn't want to work in pediatrics, but she'll take the float position, which includes pediatrics. And the girl's talking to her, you sure you're ready to come back and all that. And
yeah, then everyone knew her, so she used to work there.
Right, but I mean, I didn't know if she worked as maybe, dietary or housekeeping or whatever. I mean, I didn't know what her position was there. But I'm assuming, I think we find out in just a little bit that she actually is a nurse. But we don't really know there. And I just thought that was so odd. Because if she was a nurse and she worked as a nurse and now she's working as a waitress, I don't know.
Well, that's why I'm asking, did she really want this job? Because she goes in for the interview. She doesn't want pediatric shifts. She wants some sort of surgical or whatever, but there's nothing available for what she wants. So she takes the pediatric offer.
Well, she takes a float position, which means you go wherever they're low or, wherever they have a high volume. So if surgical's high, then you go to surgical. And if pediatrics is high, then you go to pediatrics and stuff like that. You float the hospital is what
okay,
you do.
Okay, so whatever. But she goes to this interview, and the interviewee woman, the woman in charge, gets kind of distracted by a sick kid and has to help the sick kid. And goes and just says, here, take my key set and go to the cafeteria and let yourself in, and I'll meet you in a few minutes. But on the way, Ellie goes and steals bandages and medication.
I thought she stole medication. I don't think she did. Upon re-looking at that and what we see later, right after this, I think she just stole cutting supplies and bandages and stuff like that. I don't think she took medication. Because I thought she did, too, and I thought, what on earth,
She takes a little vial of something. It might have just been antiseptic. She's doing is putting it on her cut on her leg.
Right. I think she just took cutting. And, not that you steal anything, but I think that she took the cutting supplies because what she had seen with that kid was so, it made her so distraught that she knew she was going to cut herself. And so, she
took something to... She took a tool that would cut her leg?
Like a razor.
All right. So then she takes the keys and throws them on the table and leaves. Like, what? That kind of fucks up her chance in the job interview, right?
Yeah. She decided, I think, after she saw that little boy sitting there vomiting with cancer, we assume, because he's bald, that she didn't want to do that. She wasn't ready to do that, is how I took that scene. So she just took the cutting supplies, left. First time I watched, I thought she was taking drugs, and I was like, dang, I hope she's not doing that. But I don't think she was. I think she just took the cutting supplies, threw the keys down, and left.
So she went in to get the job, found out it was too intense, right, and didn't want it.
Right, she just couldn't do it. Couldn't handle sick kids, and left.
So she goes to the beach and picks up some shells, and here we hear her talking to the detective and asks him if he's ever had a secret. And he says, how would I know if I did? What?
No, it's just funny. Because that was a great question. She's like, have you ever had a secret that you wouldn't even tell yourself? You wouldn't even admit to yourself? And he's like, well, how would I know? Oh, it was kind of a funny thing. That was a great answer, by the way. How would I know if I wouldn't tell myself?
Great answer by him.
Right, yeah.
So she says everybody does, or he does, I can't remember. But everybody probably does have a secret that they don't admit to themselves. And then she fixes her leg and puts a Band-Aid on it. And that cutting yourself thing is a whole mystery to me. I mean, I can see why people take drugs and their lives dissolve into, like, numbness. But I don't see cutting myself. I don't get that.
Well, you know, I mean, having daughters and stuff, I've definitely heard a lot about it. And it's just something I wouldn't even attempt to try to, you know, talk about in any kind of intellectual way. But I know it happens. It definitely happens. And did you see her leg? Did you see her thigh with all the little tiny scars that they showed? This wasn't something new she did.
Yeah.
This was something that she had been doing.
So she goes back to the diner, and Oscar is there, and he's calling her Bailey. And
yeah, we see that again and again, yeah.
He tells her a guy was looking for her, and he left her a note, but she kind of pretends not to care. Like, I don't care, I'm going to read it, I'll read it later. But she doubles back and sneaks around and reads the note.
Yeah, but now, see, we didn't see that in Noah's version. Nothing about a note.
Yeah, so he says, I need your help, call me. And Oscar starts to show her the plan for the bowling alley, which I guess is a big part of that town meeting that he has to kind of get approved by the city council.
Right.
And she tells him it'll never get approved. And so he flirts with her and kind of harasses her and lets her off early. And
right.
Kind of teasing. He's teasing her. He's like, you know, they're kind of old friends, no matter what they've been through as far as romance. But he kind of asks her for support to his cause, and she says she'll be at the town hall later that night.
Right. And he asks her to promise to have his back, and she's just like, you know, why would I do that? And this is where Oscar said something that I thought kind of reminded me back of what I had said earlier, but he said, unlike your husband, you understand that people need to change to survive here.
Yeah, unlike Cole.
Right. Right.
Yep. So Allie goes back to the library, or I guess she goes to the library. This is her version. And she sees Noah working, and she tries to avoid him once she sees him, like, oh, shit. And she tries to dodge him, but he sees her.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her his story idea, and it's like boy fisherman meets girl waitress, and that's the story. So then they kiss, and Ellie shows him her grandfather in a book when the grandfather was 25, and he looks like he caught a big marlin or some big fish.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells him she was close to her grandparents, that her grandparents were the ones that raised her.
Yeah, that was interesting. And it was interesting, she was talking about her grandfather, though, and saying, my grandmother used to say he probably never even caught that fish, but he just showed up on the scene. And, I mean, she has such love when she's talking about him. And such fond memories, and she does it again and again. So,
so you got any take on that, Michelle? You were raised by your grandparents, weren't you?
Great grandparents, and yeah. I mean, you can. It's a huge generational change. You feel like. I mean, I don't know, because I don't know how normal teenagers feel with their parents as far as how you feel like they're so out of touch. But I know that with my great-grandparents, I really felt like they didn't understand, you know, that kind of thing. But I was so close to them. It's like the grandparent relationship just magnified is what I imagine it to be. So I could really feel her love for them, and yeah, it's pretty neat.
So they go out to the docks, and Allie tells Noah the story of how the docks used to be super busy, but really not anymore because everything's been fished out by the commercial fishermen. They scraped all the fish away, all the coral reefs, all the habitat, and they've kind of ruined the fishing business.
Right, they're talking about how the big companies came in and just destroyed their, basically their livelihood there.
Yeah, and so she says, I could introduce you to some real fishermen. Why don't you go out with them and hang out and work with them? And they work in the evening till the morning.
Right.
And that's what you were kind of saying, that will, if they work from 5 in the evening to 5 in the morning, that will being there mid-morning seemed a little unusual. To be a fisherman.
Well, yeah, right, and this is the second time we've heard this, because the first time was when she went to pick, when she went to get the cooler of whatever he gave her, and she said, go home and go to, you know, get some sleep, because he was talking about being tired after being out all night, and that was really early, so this is the second time they brought this up.
And Allie thinks that Noah has a misinterpretation of the town as, like, simple, humble fisher people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to kiss again, but she's reluctant because it's right in the middle of her hometown. It's hard to be secretive, you know, on the docks in a small place. So,
right, and a boy catches him. A boy sees him. So, you know, he's like, did you know him? And she said, no, but this can't happen, kind of, like this.
Yeah, but he kind of says, well, I need you, you're my insider. You know, it's his excuse, I'm sure, to keep the romance going, but...
Well, yeah, I know, but he's... But you know, she says, you're going to leave, but this is my home. You'll be gone in a month or whatever, but I'll be here forever.
Right. It's her... You know, she's being dangerous in her hometown. And
right. Something she can't leave.
She can't really hide...
And so they decide again, that this is just going to be a strictly professional relationship. It was old at that point, to tell you the truth. I was tired of I was getting dizzy from rolling my eyes so much. Both of them. Are you kidding me?
Both eyes?
Well, hopefully both eyes at one time, because that would be bad if not. Well, but yeah.
If you think you're tired now, wait till episode 4. But let's plow through this. So he makes a joke about, okay, you're my insider, but if your hand makes its way into my pants accidentally, don't worry. And it's all stupid, right?
Yeah. I mean, I roll. Thank you.
We're friends, right? Goodbye, friend. Like, so Allie invites him to come to the board meeting or the town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we see next, right? The town hall meeting.
Okay, and this is where she says her husband will be there. So maybe in his version, she hadn't told him. But in this version, she had told him. So maybe you're right.
That was my point. That's why he was, like, surprised. Like,
absolutely.
Oh, shit.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
So we get to the town hall meeting, and Mary-Kate is making fun of stuff. Oh, God. We sat through another deer eating the vegetable garden problem. And, you know, some of these old ladies' beach stairs need to get repaired and whatever.
Right.
She's kind of making fun of it.
And is she drinking a beer?
She probably is. She's a flippy floppy hippie chick married to this coal family.
I like her.
Yeah, that figures. So Oscar shows his plan, which is, you know, hey, we're gonna make a bowling alley. Yeah, she passes the beer too to Allie. That was funny. Hey, mm-hmm. I got a beer.
Yeah, no.
I'm in. I'm down. But Oscar talks about his plan, and he gets one guy to support him. One lady opposes it. And then it kind of...
And Cole stands up.
Dominoes into, everything imposing it. So Cole stands up, too much progress. We're not a tranquil community anymore. We're going to be
Do you want to turn it into Jersey Shore? Yeah. I mean, really? A bowling alley is going to turn Montauk into the Jersey Shore?
This is why I said follow the money. Cole's into something that if they get too big, his little bootlegging operation is going to be in jeopardy. He needs the secret little quiet, humble hamlet. You know,
But it's nonprofit. I mean, he's not rich. He's not making any money.
We don't know what they're doing though, Michelle.
But from what they're showing us that they're close to, I mean, not destitute maybe, but they're, they're always talking about money strapped, cash strapped and that kind of stuff. And then, he's trying to protect something. I don't know. Cole doesn't sit well with me in her story of Cole for the most part.
There's something lurking in this underneath the surface, and it's some sort of thing. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a good show, right? We don't care about the affair that much. It's what's lurking. What's the crime?
But then he brings up his son. So do you think that this guy is using his dead son?
Yes.
To further his illegal agenda?
Yeah, he's grandstanding in front of the whole town council about, we got to not be greedy. This will be the downfall. My son is buried here. This is our heaven. Let's keep it. It's bullshit because he's got something cooking.
Okay.
If he didn't, it'd be like the Waltons. It's not. It's like a 10 episode, so we're halfway through almost, and it's going to be something.
You don't think Cole is kind of Waltoning? And I don't know if we're halfway.
No, he's evil. His family. Well, I'm guessing. I'm giving him my take, so I might be 100% wrong.
I just don't know yet.
All right, well, there's hints. I'm just looking at the hints, like his brother sneaking upstairs with a 16-year-old girl that he's already been caught with once. That's his brother. Anyway, so let's go through this. So it looks like Oscar's defeated, right? The bulk of the crowd kind of buys into Cole, like, yeah, we are a small-town hamlet. Let's keep it simple and...
And so they put off the vote anyway. So that's all we know at this point. But you're right. People definitely did applaud and back Cole over...
And Allie did not like Cole using their son's memory in this political venue.
And let me just say, I don't blame her one bit.
Well, especially since he's up to more no good, and she may know about it. But even if he was up to good, it would not be cool for him to talk about that.
No, I completely agree.
So Oscar storms in there and wants to fight him for ruining his... That was pretty dumb, I think. You ruined my presentation. So he wants to start a fight with him in the firehouse.
I can totally see that. I can totally see somebody being that irate. I mean, this was his livelihood. He wanted to do this to make money, and Oscar doesn't have a lot either. We haven't focused a lot on Oscar as a character.
Well, this makes Oscar innocent to me. Oscar's just a simpleton. He's like, he doesn't hide his cards very well. Like, he's wanting to fight. All he wants is a bowling alley. That's Oscar's biggest crime, and he's horny. You know, he likes the waitresses in his restaurant. But Cole and his family all have something underhanded cooking. And, so Oscar didn't get his way in this presentation.
Yeah, at least not definitively in his way, and it doesn't look good. So, I could see him being upset. I could see him coming out and, pitching the fit.
Yeah. So the detective asks, I guess, why was Oscar invited to the wedding?
Yeah, he says there's no love lost between Oscar and the Lockharts. You know, that's what Allison's saying to the detective. And then the detective brings up the wedding that Oscar was invited to. And she says they all stand together when it comes down to it.
Yeah, we're all like family, weddings, funerals, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And then she points out here that she needs to call her sitter. So, we know there's some kid. So.
Right. Oh, and the detective also says, I suppose that explains why you were there. I guess meaning at the, I don't know what. I put a bunch of question marks. What did he mean by that? I suppose that explains why you were there.
Oh, I didn't see that.
At the town hall meeting? I don't know. I don't know what that means. But yeah, she has to leave and he has more questions, but she needs to call the sitter. So she's got some kid or she, you know, must be a kid, huh? It must be her kid.
Yeah.
And she goes home and she gets a text while she's in bed with Cole, a text from Noah. And he apologizes for not being there. So Noah didn't go to the town hall meeting that she had a version of.
Right. And they didn't meet afterward and they didn't sit on the beach and they didn't have, you know, that whatever form of sex that they ended up having on at the waterfront. None of that happened in her story, but it did in his.
And they have 3G on Montauk. They have 3G phone connection.
Oh, is that what it said on her phone?
Yeah, I kind of got into that. So then Allie does to Cole what Noah did to Helen, right?
Yeah.
Don't wake up. Just let me have sex with you while you're asleep.
Right. Right. What's up with that?
So how would they have known each other's stories enough to be the opposite version?
See, I don't know. I don't know. I've got that. I don't know. I'm like, weirdly, you know, this is where she tells him not to wake up. And it's like, Noah asked her, what are you doing? And it's like, she thought, what am I doing? Okay, I'll do this. And so she turns over and she wakes Cole up and then asks him not to wake up for what they're doing. I don't know. Weird.
Yeah, that implies there's a third party interpretation. Like, it's not just her, because Cole wasn't there to, or Noah wasn't there to watch Allie and Cole to give a different version. Like, I'll copy that and make that my version. Like, he couldn't have known that, and she could not have known his version.
Unless they've conspired together about their stories. And just enough to make them different, or maybe they've gotten together and put these stories together. I don't know.
Yeah, weird. But that's how it ends. That's the end of number 3.
Yep.
So stay in touch with us on westcoastproject.com, support at West Coast Project, or email Michelle at Michelle from TN, and email Mike at Scathing Tweets. Not email, but tweet us. Tweet Michelle from TN, at Michelle from TN, at Scathing Tweets. Anything else, Michelle? What do you got for the end of 3 here?
That's it. Done for the end of 3.